The following program is sponsored by Benveo.
I love KRMG's Ask the Expert weekends. I learn a lot from each show.
The shows are inspiring.
Whether it's mechanics or gardening, I learn so much each time I tune in.
I love that the experts are right here in our community.
Now, mind your business with Dr. Mark Lewandowski on our Ask the Experts weekend on News 102.3 KRMG.
This is Mind Your Business with Dr. Mark Lewandowski on News 102.3 and AM 740 KRMG.
Spreading the excitement of entrepreneurial growth all over Oklahoma.
Whether you want to start a business or grow a business, Dr. Mark is your go-to expert.
This show is all about you, and it starts right now.
On News 102.3 KRMG.
Hello, Oklahoma. Welcome to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski, and it is my pleasure to talk to you today. This is the show that's all about you, the entrepreneur, the guy or gal in Oklahoma that's making an impact on their community. It is really, really my pleasure to be here with you, and we're going to be talking about some really fun things, and we've got a great, great guest today. In fact, every time that we have the show, we have a thing called the Entrepreneur Showcase, and in the Entrepreneur Showcase, we showcase somebody in the community that's really doing something exceptional, and we're going to talk to that person in just a moment, but I've got a question for you. Do you believe that the early bird gets the worm? Oh my gosh, that's the oldest phrase in the book. That all of a sudden that refers back to the person that gets up early and heads out the door and gets stuff done. Now, I absolutely am a believer in the early bird that gets the worm, because every Monday morning I leave the house at oh dark 30 and I go to my favorite breakfast restaurant. I lay out my notebook and I plan the entire week. And yes, I do it on a notebook, paper and pencil. I'm unlike so many that are sophisticated that need a computer, but by the time I open my computer and see all the stuff that's going on and there's an indication of how many emails I've got waiting for me, I all of a sudden lose focus on my creativity. I lose focus on where I'm going to go that week. I'm all of a sudden just captured, imprisoned by all the things that I've got to do for this day for other people. So I don't bring technology. I just use a pencil and paper. But that's not the end of the story. Because today I don't want to talk about the early bird gets the worm. I want to talk about the second part of that phrase. And that goes like this. The early bird gets the worm, but the second rat gets the cheese. Oh my goodness, what a great statement. If you haven't thought of that before, I'm going to repeat it. The early bird gets the worm, but the second rat gets the cheese. Now, what does that mean? You know, in the idea that there's rat traps or mice traps in a home, that first rat runs across that trap to get that cheese, and wham! That trap snaps that poor rat's neck. Now, you might say, well, I don't feel sorry at all for that poor rat. Poor rat, my eye. But think about the next rat. The rat right behind him comes right up on his tail, looks at him, realizes he's dead. The trap has been snapped and shut. There's no danger whatsoever. The second rat runs off with the reward. He runs off with the cheese. Now, isn't that just like innovation? Isn't that just like being a thought leader in business? Is it possible that those people that are first, that are the real thought leaders, the real innovators, the people that try something, that take a risk, sometimes the market mechanism snaps their neck and it's the next person that comes along that gets the reward? I want to talk a little bit about that, because the second rat is a philosophy that's true throughout innovation. In fact, in innovative schools, like the one I went to, they talk about the second rat. And it's a fundamental portion of the conversation about innovation and using innovation in the marketplace. You know, let's stop for a minute and let's talk about creativity. Creativity is this wonderful experience of coming up with real great thoughts. But innovation is the application of creative thought. So if innovation is the application of creative thought, that means you've got this creative idea and now you're going to apply that creative thought to a marketplace. And it's not uncommon at all for the innovator like you and the innovator like me to be the first one to marketplace and that market mechanism snaps our neck. and somebody follows you, improves the idea ever so slightly, and runs off with the market or the cheese. So what do? Well, you don't want to never innovate. You want to be that innovator. If you're listening to this show and you're anything like me, you're constantly coming up with ideas. You've got some crazy room in your office where you get away and there's a dry erase board or pencil and paper and you write all over everything. If you're like me, you go to a restaurant where they've got paper on the table and you get an idea and you write it down and you sketch it and then you tear off a part of that paper that was used as your tablecloth and it becomes your great idea. If you're like me, you can remember that first time that you took a napkin out on an airplane flight or in a restaurant or at some place and you wrote your idea down. If you're like me, your very best ideas happen in church when you're supposed to be listening to the sermon and you're not. That's innovation. Those are innovators. Creative people come up with ideas in places they cannot necessarily control. So now you've got the innovative idea, and you're an innovator, and you want to take it to marketplace, but too many times, you might be the first rat. Today, I'm going to talk about the merits of the second rat. The merits of being the guy or gal that follows the first person. See, in great innovative schools, they teach you that, number one, you should be leveraging the work of other people and their ideas. Now, is it possible that in your industry, there's somebody else that might be smarter or more creative than you? Yes, it's possible. In fact, if you look at innovation, there's always somebody that's advancing thought beyond everyone else, and other people follow. But so following the great innovators is really a great strategy. Consider Burger King. Do you think Burger King led the way? No, Burger King doesn't lead the way. They allow McDonald's to lead the way. And then Burger King comes and follows up second. They're the very best second place industry I can imagine. They're very good at being second. Was Starbucks the very best coffee company? No. In fact, they weren't ever number one until they started to really expand across the nation. There were other people on the West Coast, like the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf Company, that really dominated the industry. Starbucks came after them. In fact, the founder of the Coffee Bean and Tea Leaf Company was a guy named Herbie Hyman, and Herbie was the dominant provider of coffee in that community. Starbucks came after the fact. They watched and they looked and they improved. How many companies like yours and like mine can watch and learn and improve and leverage the work of other people? Think about it this way. If other people have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars crafting their idea, maybe millions of dollars crafting their idea, and they missed the marketplace ever so slightly, do you have to go and start over? No. You simply need to take that concept, that really good idea, and apply it to a marketplace that you feel is more accepting of that idea. So being the second rat is not all about reinventing the wheel. Being the second rat is all about taking the ideas of someone else and applying them to a new marketplace. This is really a great idea. In fact, years ago, about 18 years ago, I was in the PBM business, the pharmacy benefits management business, and it was a very good business. What made it such a great business is how few people knew how to do it. In fact, there were only a handful of companies around the country that knew how to do it. And I came across a couple of individuals that were in the hospice industry. And to tell you the truth, this was 18 years ago. I didn't even know at that time what hospice was. It was a relatively new industry sector. And when they told me what they did, I simply applied an existing business model for employer-sponsored health plans, and I used that model in a new business called hospice, and it took off and it went beautifully. And my partner Paul and I have been doing that now for 18 years successfully. So number one, on being the second rat, you've got to leverage the work of other people. Number two, leverage how much money they've spent, and that allows you to follow up. Somebody else has already invested a significant amount of money. Now, sometimes, and number three, when you're going to be the second rat, you might need to partner. somebody out there is coming up with great ideas, and you might allow them to be the thought leader, and you come in as a value-added reseller. You've heard of that, the VAR, value-added reseller. That's the person that's smart enough to take an existing idea, tweak it ever so slightly, and run to the marketplace with this concept. You don't have to own everything. In fact, the reality is the money is in the value-added resale, not in all the startup cost and owning everything. Don't be that foolish person that thinks they have to own it all. A real good entrepreneur takes pieces of the puzzle from multiple different places and then runs to the market with it. Finally, I'll say about being the second rat, keep an eye out for the people that are really innovating and watch them. Be ready to move. In fact, today we're going to be talking with a special guest who's my partner in helping me get ready to move. He's my community banker. He's the president of a local bank that whenever I've got a new idea, he helps me run to the marketplace. And we're going to have him right after the break. This is the Mind Your Business Show on News 102.3 KRMG. We're back to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski. This is KRMG, and this is an exciting show. It's an exciting show because we're going to have a little bit of an attitude today. Today, we've got a very special guest, a friend of mine who's a banker. He's actually the president of First Star Bank. They're based out of Tulsa and Muskogee, and they're a community bank, and they are fantastic. Now, I want to tell you, I've got relationships with Bank of the West, and I've got relationships with BOK and Regent Bank, First Star, or MidFirst and Arvest, but the place where I bank my business, the place where I go where I get guidance and counsel and help and advice is First Star Bank. And in just a moment, we're going to be having the president of First Star Bank, and he's going to answer those tough questions. The questions that everybody thinks about, but they don't have the courage to ask their banker. Well, by golly, we're going to ask those questions on this show. But before we do that, I just want to say again, thank you to our sponsor, Benveo. Benveo is a company that is changing healthcare. They are producing and creating very good healthcare products for employees and employers all over the state and around the nation that are a fraction of the cost of the big block healthcare companies. And I want to say to Jonathan and the people at Benveo, thank you very much for your sponsorship. We truly appreciate you. If you want to know more about Benveo or their product offerings, go to benveo.com. That's BENVEO.com and talk to Jonathan Pinto. Thanks, Jonathan. So here we are. We're going to talk about something everybody wants to know about. They want to know about money. I get more questions about money than anything else because that seems to be the challenge. You know, very few entrepreneurs are sitting on a ton of cash with no ideas. Most entrepreneurs have more ideas than they have money. And they want to know, how do they create a great relationship with a banker? Well, I want to tell you that my banker is here, Mr. Chris Rector. He's the president of First Star Bank. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be back with you.
Hey, it's so great to have you on Mind Your Business. I appreciate you. And really what we appreciate on this show is truth, honesty, and getting right to the point on answers. Chris, let's start with this. What does every entrepreneur need to know about banking?
Well, like you and I were talking before the show, it's all about relationship, and they need to think of their banker not as their banker, but as their financial partner, because that's really what we are. When we have clients such as yourself and others that come to us that have financing needs, borrowing needs, we really are. We're partners in the deal. We're not just your banker. We're financial partners.
Okay, so, but I come into your bank, and I'm going to be a little bit of the devil's advocate. I come into your bank, and I open the double glass doors, and the floor's all beautiful, and there's a rug there that has your bank name. And right there's some lady that says, "Stop! Who are you? What do you want?" No, they don't really do that. But that's the feeling people get right in a bank. They don't have a feeling of, you know, that this is like their local pub. This is a bank. It can be a little scary. So the question is, how does an entrepreneur go from a client or a prospect to a truly integrated friend of the bank, get to that relationship? You know, we can talk about relationships, but there's a perception that bankers are three-piece suits, stiff shirts, you know, cufflinks, and behind closed doors. How do they get to become a friend of the banker?
Right. We're just, you know, ordinary people, just like you guys. But, you know, the thing is, it's the relationship. So most of the time, it's a referral. It's a warm referral that you refer somebody to me. We come in, we sit down, and we go over the parameters. We find out. We let them tell us their story. What's their idea? What's their deal? And then we start talking. We start digging in the weeds to see if, you know, is this a deal that is what we call a bankable deal? How are we gonna finance this transaction? So that's how it starts most of the time. Many times it's not a cold just walk in the door. It's a warm referral. But you know, we community banks are really the lifeblood of this economy, and we're the ones that help these entrepreneurs with their ideas.
Okay, let's talk for a second about – everybody's heard the term community bank. So how is a community bank different than one of the big national behemoth, the big giants?
Right.
What's a community bank deliver that makes them unique? What's their value proposition?
You know, I can only speak for First Star, and I've worked for other community banks. But for First Star, I mean, we are willing to think outside the box. Many times you have banks that have their policies and their procedures, and they say, you know, Mark, this doesn't fit inside the four walls of our box, of our bank, and so we can't do it. We try to think outside the box. We try to be creative. Like I told you before the show, it's not about – we rarely tell a customer no. We try to tell them, okay, here's the parameters. Here's how we can structure this deal. And sometimes, many times, we're able to, you know, to come to terms on an agreement on a deal, but sometimes you're not. But I think it's just community banks are able to be flexible. They're able to be creative, whereas the bigger banks, unfortunately, they have their niche and things that they're good at that community banks can't do. And many times, it's financing those entrepreneurs, those startups, those, you know, what we call mid-market, lower mid-market deals. That's the sweet spot of community banks.
Now, the community bank, by its charter, they're supposed to engage in the community and help develop the community. And so there are regulations, you know, national regulations in the banking industry that say you get special privileges as a community bank, but you've got to invest in the community.
That's correct. Yeah. And it's kind of a catch-22 because we are so regulated that, you know, you have the government that wants community banks to finance a lot of these mid-market startups, entrepreneurs. But when a bank does that sometimes, then you have the regulators that come in and want to criticize it. So we've kind of got to have a good balancing act, and that's where structure comes into play. And having a banker that understands your idea, understands your industry, understands your project, that can give you the parameters to help make you successful.
All right, let's talk about that because you use the word startup. And as you know, we have a lot of listeners that are idea people. They've got a great idea. Maybe they've got a good job right now, but they've got an idea and they're thinking about going out on their own. What are the elements, what we might call the ratios? What are you looking for in a startup? If somebody comes to you with an idea, tell me about the real process. What does it really look like?
Yeah, so there's, you know, like you said, the entrepreneurs, they've got a lot of great ideas. What they don't have a lot of access to is capital. And, you know, that's where we come into play. But what we really need, you know, startups, if you look at statistics, and it's going to vary from industry to industry, you know, the percentages more so than not are that they fail or they don't work. The idea doesn't work. And it's not the idea doesn't work. It's probably because it wasn't structured right or lack of capital. And so what we see is we see investors on the sidelines that have a lot of capital, but they don't have the ideas. And so what we look for is we try to help them partner with investors that we know, put them together and help capitalize a transaction that way. And then the bank can come in and help provide additional capital.
Oh, my gosh, that's fantastic. It's almost like you're a private equity or an M&A transaction kind of people. Within the community bank, what I'm hearing you saying is that if you see a great idea and maybe the entrepreneur doesn't have enough working capital, or capital, they don't have any debt access and they don't have enough cash, so you might place them with the right partner, somebody that can help them until it's a bankable deal.
Yeah, we try to. We've got a lot of investors, again, on the sidelines that have told us that, hey, if you see a good idea, if you see a good transaction, a deal, let us know. And so we try to help them. You know, again, they've got the money, but not the idea.
Okay, we're going to come right back in just a moment with Chris Rector from First Star Bank. He's the president and deals with these kinds of opportunities all the time. We're going to continue talking about working capital and then capital improvements next. So stay with us. This is Mark Lewandowski. You're listening to the Mind Your Business Show on KRMG. Welcome back to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski. This is the show that's all about you, the entrepreneur. You know, I get, 100 emails a week from individuals sending in questions, and I would say that 70% of them are all about money. Money is the biggest challenge for the entrepreneur. If they've got a going concern, they want to grow it. If they've got a new idea, they want to start it. If they've got a great business, they want to sell it. For the most part, the questions we get are about money. Today, I have a special guest, and it's one that we've been pressing for months to get on the show. He just happens to be very busy and stops answering my calls when I tell him we want to get him on the radio. So it's Chris Rector, the president of First Star Bank. Chris's office right here in Tulsa, out south, and they also have a location in Muskogee. First Star Bank is a community bank, and it's the bank in which I do business. Now, those of you that listen to the show know that my partner and I, we have little or no debt. However, we have a very good banking relationship because the banking relationship is important to not only protecting our money, but protecting our workflows and our processes and protecting our clients. We have a lot of accounts in which our clients have money in an account that we share, and therefore we've got to have a great banking relationship. And we've got a very special guest here answering questions to the entrepreneur, Chris Rector. Chris, thanks again for being
here. Thank you.
We were talking when we left about the ratios or the elements you consider before a loan. What are the kinds of things you look now? Let's say that we've already talked about the startup business. What about the existing business that now is looking to expand and they want a working capital line of credit? What does that kind of look like for you at the bank?
Sure. And again, it depends from industry to industry. But what we're looking for is, you know, how are we going to secure it? Right. That's what most bankers. That's the first
Doggone
thing they think
you guys.
About.
I'm telling you, you're always protecting yourself.
Yeah. We think of how are we going to secure it? What's the cash flow look like? Can you repay this? So those are some of the things that we're looking at.
You know, when you talk about how we can secure that, the listener might say, God, the bank is always looking out for themselves, their best interest. But think about it from this perspective. If the business owner, if the bank can have a secured note against assets, then the business owner's got a secure asset as well. I mean, really, a banking relationship is really about communication, agreement, planning, strategy, and safety. You know, most people say, well, banks, they loan money, but they don't want to take any risk. You know, that you've heard that how
oh,
many
yeah.
times?
Oh, yeah.
Only every day, right? You know, the other thing is, as an entrepreneur, I want to take risk, but I want to take controlled risk. And I think that's what I'm hearing about you guys as a banker. You're going to take risk, but you want controlled risk.
Absolutely. I mean, every decision that a bank makes every day involves risk. Every decision involves risk. It's how long do we lock this customer for in on a rate? Well, then, with rates rising like they are today, we've got interest rate risk on our side. As a customer, you've got interest rate risk. You want to lock in for a longer period of time. The bank would prefer to lock in for a shorter period of time. So every decision we make involves risk. You know, from a collateral standpoint, again, sometimes customers feel like that you're over-collateralizing this deal. But what the customer doesn't see is the reason banks, you know, get collateral, obviously, is they've seen – unfortunately, deals go bad. Fortunately, we at First Star, we haven't had to experience that, but it does happen. And so when that does happen, a customer thinks that, well, this piece of collateral is worth this, but really, you know, when you go to liquidate something,
yeah,
it's worth
pennies
on the dollar.
What will the market bear? That's right.
That's why, you know, I always say, hey, if you're gonna repay the debt, you know, then It shouldn't matter what kind of collateral you're having to put up at the end of the day.
Not long ago, I was helping an entrepreneur friend of mine sell his business to an investor. And there was a disagreement on the valuation, so they took it out to an accounting firm. And this accounting firm, they're rock solid. And they created a value and then called me. And the value was much lower than my client, the seller, wanted. And we had an argument. The accounting firm didn't understand that what a business is worth is what a willing seller and a willing buyer will agree upon. And that's it. I mean, beyond that, these are all just equations that help us get to a number. Now, this is interesting. You allowed us to peek behind the curtain just a moment ago when you talked about your interest rate risk. So I want to talk about there are 7 determinants of interest rate. And one of the determinants of the cost of interest is what is the bank's or the financial institution's risk that if they sell a 5-year note today at 5%, what happens if interest rates rise? And they could have sold that note a year from now at 5.25%, 5.5%, or 6%. Let's talk about that just a little bit more, because I think that's really something that's important. How does the entrepreneur handle that, and how does the entrepreneur plan properly with the bank?
Sure. I mean, I think in today's environment, and probably what we foresee, you know, if you just read a lot of the economists over the next 12 months, they're expecting another 50 basis point increase in prime, which is what a lot of your community banks will base their cost off of, is prime. And so right now it's at 5%. Well, we're sitting out here thinking and believing that it's going to go up another half a point, so it'd be 5.5 by the end of this year. So the entrepreneur and the bank has to keep that in mind. Again, like I said, you know, the entrepreneur needs to really try to, if I'm in their position, I put myself in your shoes as an investor, as a borrower, I want to try to lock in as long a term as I can, but I also have to understand the bank's position. And not only are loan rates going up, but banks are having to pay more for deposits. So you don't have any loans, but you have deposits with me, and you're sitting here saying, Chris, a year ago you were paying me 0.5%. Now I want 2%. Well, my cost just went up 1.5%.
Sure. Think about this, and very few people think about the bank buys money and then turns around and sells money. I mean, that's pretty much what a bank does. I bring $100,000 to you. In other words, you've bought it from me. You're going to pay me you're going to keep my $100,000 in your bank, and you're going to pay me interest on that money. And in order for you to be a profitable bank, you're going to turn around and loan it to somebody else at a higher interest rate than you're paying me on the money. I mean, it's just that simple. It's a business.
That's what we're doing. We're trying to get a spread off your money. And the other thing that a bank has to do that I think is helpful for an entrepreneur, a borrower, to understand is, you know, you asked, you know, how long do we want to lock in for? Well, as a bank, if I'm going to take your 3-year CD, well, I want to try to match that 3-year lock-in to a 3-year lock-in on the loan rate. So if I'm going to pay you 2.5% for 3 years on a CD, I'm going to try to match that liability, because that's a liability to a bank. Deposits are. Loans are an asset to us.
Now, you guys really are, you're really a business bank. I mean, you're a business person's bank. You know, I talked to you not long ago about, hey, I'm going to run down and buy a pickup truck. Do you guys want to loan me some money? Or do you want me to go out to the markets where it's super cheap? Because, you know, me, I like to store up my cash. And on assets like that, I like to pay them over time. I need my cash as an entrepreneur. I need to leverage cash for times when I can't just easily access funds at 3%. So you're really not a commercial bank. You guys are really kind of a business bank.
Yeah, we're a business bank. We don't do a lot of retail lending. Obviously, for you, if you wanted to come in and buy your kid a car or something like that, we would do it. But our focus is on the business customer.
All right, let's get back to those business customers. Let's say we've got a going concern, someone listening, and they're saying, I need to expand. I need capital improvement. So I've got a building. I'm going to add to my building. What do you look for in a capital improvement? We've talked about startups. We've talked about working capital. But now we're talking about capital improvements. We're talking about real solid assets. How does that change the way that you guys look at a deal within your bank?
Yeah, just for instance, and not to talk about the customer, but we had a deal the other day with a new customer. They've got a building. They're looking to expand. Well, our first question is, why are you wanting to expand? Well, their business is expanding. They're bringing on new customers. They're running out of space. They're looking at having to go rent space. And they've got excess land. And so those are the questions we're asking, is why? Does it really make sense for you to do that? Or is it more of a speculative, I want to go expand because I hope to go get additional business, versus I've got the business,
right,
I want to go
right.
expand.
Yeah, you want to really see, is this just pie in the sky, or is this a need that they've got to do now? Let me ask you about this. Many times the people perceive that they can't go to a bigger bank or to get money from a bank because they don't have audited or reviewed financial statements. How important is it for them to be either audited or reviewed?
You know, it's very important. I think for a customer, you know, the entrepreneur, the business owner, they need to think in terms of, you know, am I ever going to sell? Do I see myself selling? If you do, if your focus is I want to try to build this business up and sell it in the next 5 years, a buyer wants to see at minimum reviewed financials. And so if I start that process early on, then I don't have to worry about that, because I can hand that potential buyer, you know, 3 or 4 years of reviewed or audited financials.
It is absolutely an investment. Important. I mean, we make that investment every year in audited financial statements, and it costs us money, but it's absolutely the right thing to do. It allows me to have what I call a 5-minute banking relationship. And when I call you and I say, hey, I've got a great opportunity, I need $100,000 next Thursday, I want to have a 5-minute conversation in which you can say, yep, no problem, come by on Wednesday, make sure your financial's up to date, and send me a new personal financial statement. Those are the kind of things. But it requires really good accounting and great reporting.
Absolutely. You know, if you think of it in terms of, you mentioned cost, it does cost money, but the value you get out of that in the long term is far outweighs the cost, in my opinion.
When we come back, I want to talk about a couple of other crazy ideas, some things that bankers, the bankers do that the entrepreneur really needs to know about. And I think one of those, and I'll tease everybody before we go to break, is in every loan, there's these things called bank covenants. And it's almost like the cuss word of the deal. It's the foul language of the whole process. But on the contrary, I think the bank covenants are one of the best parts of a bank loan. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. And I think it's something really important that our listeners need to understand, just how important bank covenants are, because they're communication between the business owner and the banker about what are the rules of the ongoing engagement. And we're going to talk about those things and many more when we come back after the break with Chris Rector from First Start Bank. But I want to remind everybody that there's this kind of content and a whole lot more on drmarklew.com. We've been doing this for years, and we've got resources for you. We'll be right back after the break. We're back on the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski. We have a special guest, Chris Rector. He's the president of First Start Bank, and we have been having a great time talking about banking, about money. And he's been giving us little insights to the way banks perceive bank transactions, mostly commercial loans. They are truly a business bank looking for ways to help entrepreneurs, going concerns, and people at the end of their career kind of wrap up their business. He is my banker, and I just appreciate him immensely. He and I are dear friends. You know, and I want to just say, and Chris can speak to this, but you know, I don't just show up at my bank when I've got to pay something. I will pop in when good things are happening, have a cup of coffee, give an update to the owner of the bank or the president of the bank, who I'm friends with, both of them. And I've got no agenda other than the fact that I perceive my banking relationship as a relationship. You know, if I've got a relationship with my wife, in which I do, I don't just see my wife only on my birthday and Christmas. You know, we have a conversation often. We've got to establish that relationship. So I'm telling you out there, if you've got a bank that you work with, I think it's important that you initiate. Take them to lunch. Give them an update on what you're doing. Pop by when good things are happening. Pop by when you've got some struggles. Get some advice. Actually, ask your banker, what is their opinion? And speaking of that, it wasn't long ago when our organization needed to borrow some money for a short-term capital need. And I went to Chris and I said, hey, I want to borrow some money. And he said, great. How much? What does it look like? What are you going to do with it? And then he and I sat together and we wrote the bank covenants. Chris, let's talk about bank covenants. Why does a loan have bank covenants?
Well, the reason is, like you and I talked earlier, it's the parameters. It's the framework for how are we going to manage this transaction going forward, and gives you an idea of the expectations of the bank, and it gives the bank the expectations of what you're going to do. Many times it's you just doing what you said you were going to do.
And, right. Really, it's something that got – so it, you've got a playing field. It's the rules in which you're going to play the
absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely.
I'm going to borrow money and pay you back. You're going to advance the money and stay off of my back, but there are some rules. And one of those rules might be a very similar, very common one, is you can't do distributions beyond X. And for you and I think I want to go back. If, as an example, let's say that an entrepreneur out there had a partner, and one of their partners loves to spend money. And so the reason that they got in this banking crisis in the first place is overspending. So now they want to come to you and they want to say, hey, I need to borrow some money. And you're thinking to yourself, man, you've been making all this money all these years. Why didn't you save some? Had you saved money, you would have been able to pay for this by yourself, but you didn't. So that's an idea of when you want, when I, as an entrepreneur, want a bank covenant, when you, as the banker, want a bank covenant, you can actually, is it possible that a client could actually sit down with you and write bank covenants?
Oh, absolutely.
And agree upon those?
Absolutely. You know, many times partnerships can be very good, but partnerships can be a challenge in our experience. And we look at the operating agreement that you have with your partners. We look at the bylaws that you have. And many times those are just written very broadly. And so it doesn't give any party a lot of meat if there was an issue with regards to, you mentioned distributions. And so that's where we come into play, because we want to see the business succeed. Some customers view bank covenants as a hindrance. We view it as, we want this company to succeed, especially in a partnership. You've got, you may have various partners thinking different things, going different directions. And so again, this is just the framework that helps all partners know that this is what we expect going forward.
One of the key bank covenants I love is a reserve account. I mean, as you know, that I'm a big advocate of no debt and having money in the bank. I love that. It makes you sleep at night, and it gives you opportunity to move quickly if you need to grow your business. But if you've got partners that love to spend the money and you know you need a reserve account, this is the time to sit down with your banker and say, hey, I really want to establish. It might take a year, but I want a required reserve account in the bank covenant that forces my partners and I to shore up or to save money over time and then distribute cash above the savings. When you get to the end of the year, people are used to a discounted or a smaller distribution, but all of a sudden now you got money in the bank in a reserve account.
Absolutely. And another covenant that's similar to that is, you know, just a working capital ratio. And so what banks look at is, you know, your current assets, which are your cash, your receivables, your inventory, minus what your current liabilities are, your accounts payable. Banks look at that. That's similar to a reserve account. We can set minimum working capital requirements. Or another one that your listeners may need to know about is, a lot of banks will set debt to worth covenants. And so we don't want that company to go out and borrow money from five other banks in town. We want to limit their debt. And again, that's to help them succeed so they have the money to grow.
Real quick, I got an email just now that said, there's an idea in the marketplace that banks want to foreclose on a loan because they want to take over the business. What's your response to that, Chris?
We are not in the business of running companies. We're in the business of helping companies succeed.
And I can just see you showing up on a Tuesday evening, putting on an apron, and going back and cooking at somebody's restaurant.
Hey,
that is not what banks do.
We don't do that. We don't want to do that. It's just the opposite.
We actually want this. The whole idea of this is that I want the entrepreneur community to understand that the bank is your friend. They're a resource. They're an advisor. They're a consultant. And they know a lot of stuff because they see a lot of stuff. They don't want to take over your business. They don't want to own your building. They want a good relationship in which you pay your note.
Yeah, why it's important. I know we're wrapping up. Why it's important to have a good relationship with your bank. Times are going to be good, but it's when times are bad. And that's if you've got a really strong relationship with your banker and you've always done what you said you would do. There are going to be bad times. You're going to have down years. But if your banker trusts you and he has that good relationship with you, those are going to be the relationships that help you get through the tough times.
This has been absolutely exceptional. Chris, I'm so grateful for you to come and to talk, you know, just straight up about banking relationships and the entrepreneur. I want everybody to remember that drmarklew.com has a host of these kinds of resources. And if you're trying to grow your business, that is the place for you to go. You've been listening to the Mind Your Business Show. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Lewandowski, saying thank you. We'll talk to you next week on KRMG.